The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance.
BTL, coming at you.
Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Matthew, how you doing?
I'm good. We have a winner on today.
We do have a winner. Very excited. We're going to have Mike Iaconelli on here in about 15 minutes, and really interested to get his thoughts on what this past week was like for him.
Absolutely. He's got his eighth BASS win.
Yeah.
It was his 250th BASS tournament, and obviously an interesting scenario there where he was on in the same weekend competing in the MLF World Championship that aired on CBS and winning a Bassmaster Eastern Open.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of marketing potential for Mr. Iaconelli.
Not that he needs it.
He's 47?
Yeah.
47. I had no idea about that. I was looking looking over that.
And some interesting hobbies, too.
Yeah, you know, he always jacks around with it, and I was just doing my typical pre-tournament research there. It's worth just looking up Mike Iaconelli's Bassmaster profile, and there on the right-hand side is his hometown, his birthday, his family, and then his hobbies. I won't list them all here. I'll leave that to you guys to go.
A couple of really interesting hobbies that Michael has.
Yeah, outside of the fishing and breakdancing, which we all knew he was very proficient at both, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
He's a busy man.
There's 12 additional hobbies that you might not have known about Mike Iaconelli.
Busy man there. All right, so tomorrow we're going to have the FLW Tour rookie on. Looking forward to talking to him, Rookie of the Year. And then today, I want to clarify something. I got several emails yesterday about the discussion that we had. It wasn't really a discussion. It was just, you know, I threw something out there that some people had been saying that it was a so-called conspiracy that the stream went down when Mike was weighing in.
Oh, you got emails about that?
Oh, yeah.
I think that what happened was so many people logged on to watch it that it froze the stream.
Listen, folks, if you seriously think that Bass intentionally did that, you're so far, not even remotely close that situation took place.
I don't think this even warrants a discussion.
What, you think that they would intentionally
do
that?
No, that's why I said I don't think it warrants a discussion.
Well, I just wanted to address it because
no way.
I wanted to address it because of the emails that I received yesterday.
For Bass, Ike winning was best case scenario.
Do you not think that if everything was rosy in the bass fishing world, professional bass fishing world, that they would want Mike Iaconelli back on the Elite Series?
Absolutely.
And be able to fish all three?
Absolutely.
Agree with you 100%. So all you guys and girls out there that think that there was some kind of conspiracy or some type of intentional motive to wipe out the stream, folks, things happen. Believe me, things happen, especially when you're trying to do. It doesn't matter what you're trying to stream, what you're trying to do, where you're trying to do it. You're always going to have some kind of situation, and timing was just really bad on when that situation occurred.
I also got the opportunity today and last night, this morning before the show, and then last night I got on Jacob Wheeler's YouTube channel, which is actually, I mean, he's a little bit of a Scott Martin, I guess, protege back when he was with FLW, and he learned how to do things the right way, but watched the behind the scenes stuff with him trying to explain how you make it to the World Championship, obviously that just aired, and then his GoPro footage, behind the scenes footage from the World Championship.
So yeah,
he like murdered everyone.
It wasn't even close.
No,
the thing was over in the first period.
Uh-oh.
It was impressive what he did. Now, when you still haven't watched the entire show, though, have you? Man, you just watched.
Correct. I've watched it from his perspective.
here's what I picked up on. All right, and I'm not going to get into the discussion that we had yesterday. Here's one of the things that I picked up when they were showing footage of these guys running around the lake and looking. It was interesting, and I don't know if other people caught on to this. There was about a 15, maybe 10-second scene of Wheeler close to the area that he absolutely smashed him in, where he stopped and he looked at his graph and he goes, "Wow, that's hydrilla." And that was it. And it never focused on anything else. That's all he really said. And then the next thing you know, he's in the trees where these fish had moved in, moved up from the hydrilla line that he had found there. And he was so dialed in, it was ridiculous.
It just sucks that we're talking about something that happened 6 months ago. It's hard to get excited about it.
I agree.
I understand, man. That's the format. That's how it works. It works with their sponsors that way, on the TV, with the programming, so it can air on CBS.
Yeah.
But it's just hard to get excited about something that happened in February. Imagine what his classic push would have been like. Obviously, is, you know, the last classic with all these guys heading in. He led the classic going into the final day.
Okay, wait a minute. So this actually occurred
at the end of February.
Right.
And then the classic was like the beginning of March.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So imagine it would have been different if it was like, holy cow, this guy just blew away the world championship in Major League Fishing, and now he's in the Bassmaster Classic, and he's leading that, and he's also won the Forestwood Cup already. So now there's the potential in the classic that he could win the world championship in all three. That's a big storyline that was just nixed, and he couldn't say anything about it. He couldn't talk about how good he was fishing, how he was coming off a massive win where he just destroyed everybody and all that. I mean,
great point.
And now it's on CBS. I mean, I legitimately found out about it on Instagram when he was holding the trophy and was like, "Oh, I forgot that was supposed to be airing." It's just, I mean, I get it, but it just feels like a disservice to the magnitude of it. I mean, he had another 10-minute video of him where he spends 12 minutes explaining how he got there.
Yeah.
And then can't talk about it for six
minutes. All right, let me ask you this. Best case scenario. Now, we've discussed you have two events and then you have a cup event. Would it be best case scenario to have the world championship, because now they've got the red crest and the world championship, to have the world championship be the final event of the year, and whoever wins can carry over that entire momentum until the very first event?
Well, that's what you have with Red Crest.
No, you still have all the cup events that are going to air,
that are going to air. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
I don't know, it's a plate of spaghetti.
How is that?
It's just everything's intertwined with each other.
That's what I'm saying. Would it not be more streamlined, more fan-friendly, more industry-friendly, more angler-friendly to have two events, then a cup? Yeah. Two events, then a cup.
And then
two events, and you keep going, and then boom, you have the Red Crest. And then after the Red Crest, you showcase the performances that have taken place the entire year by rewarding these guys at the World Championship. And they've got all the resources. They have all the resources to be able to do the World Championship live on CBS. CBS is giving them that time slot already. Mm-hmm. Figure it out. You have a time allotted period now. Mm-hmm. And why couldn't you do 2 hours of live coverage on CBS? That would blow it out.
Yeah. And then on the sponsor side.
Best case scenario.
No, I agree. On the sponsor side. Okay, let's use... So he signs... We'll use this as an example, right? So he signs with Duckett in, what, 2019?
Yeah.
It was basically... It was announced. We were there for the classic launch of the Jacob Wheeler series of rods. Blue, shaft, auto, the white, the whole thing.
Yep.
Well, he wins the world championship, and based on what I was watching, he was using a mixture of two or three different types. But he had those blue Jacob Wheeler rods, right?
Yes.
Would there not have been so much more buzz for Duckett if he had been able to put out all of that stuff and all the kids and people watching it were like, What is that new rod? Nah. Oh, it'll be at the Bassmaster Classic Expo instead of it being debuted there. Now you've got 2 or 3 weeks leading up to it to where you get more pop for his sponsors. And then also the baits, you know, any of the baits that he used, any of that type of stuff, the Bandito bug or whatever, then people could go say, you know, I want to get my hands on that Guggen bait.
Yeah.
Because he won, you know, he's pitching it in the World Championship, or he had it as a trailer for his chatterbait.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it just, it's happening now. It's like 150 degrees out, and we're talking about pre-spawn fish.
I know. I know. Now, Boyd has committed to coming on the show and kind of giving a, what do you call it, State of the Union, just kind of giving a summary of the entire year after the Red Crest. So these are some of the things that that we could ask him once again, whether or not for all aspects, for all entities involved with this, the fans, the anglers, and the sponsors, and the organization, what would really be the best? And I tried to look at it as, why are they doing it like this? And what I came up with is obviously the agreements that they have in place for the current sponsors. This is the package that they sold. So it would be enormously difficult after you have these agreements already signed to say, hey, you know what? We're going to switch things up. This is the format that we're going to go to. This is how we're going to do it. Wait a minute. That's not what we signed up for.
No, I get it. But but before, it was fine because you had the four cup events or the selects and then the cup events and then the world championship. And those guys signed up for it. And it was almost like, I don't want to call it a side. It was a side gig.
It was.
It was a side gig. And it didn't really impact their quote unquote careers.
Yeah.
Well, now it does because this is the only thing that they're fishing. So, I mean, maybe you can look at it as, no, I mean, I don't see the,
Well, here's the other thing,
the pre-spawn.
Hey, we're going to see in 2020 whether or not they make any changes. We're going to see. We're going to see if the schedule changes. We're going to see if the format changes. We're going to see if what they have learned, right, and the feedback that they've received from the fans, from the sponsors, from the anglers. They talk about, hey, this is being ran by the anglers. Okay, well, let's see what adjustments that they make in 2020 based upon everything that has happened this year. Now, I think, and I've talked about it, kind of the murkiness that exists because you have so many things going on from an MLF standpoint that it's very easy to get a little confused on what's going on. At the same time, once you get it figured out on what is actually taking place, okay, you can follow it, no problem. But for the casual fan or for the person that is just recently getting involved from a fan perspective of what's taking place in professional fishing, it could be a little murky this year. I think that murkiness goes away next year because you're not going to have the overlap that you had this year.
Yeah, you're still going to have the overlap of the cups airing as opposed to the BPT, and then who knows what the other channels are going to be airing.
Yeah.
You know, as far as other reruns.
I mean, do you not agree that performance and what these guys do during events and the success that they have truly have an impact on sales?
100%. That's literally the only reason why you sponsor some of these guys.
Yeah. So what Jacob Wheeler did at the World Championship, I mean, how many, you know, he caught some of his fish on that orange kicker blade.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, we're going to ask Iaconelli about his open win, and he used that weird Molex vibrating molded head thing, and I want to ask him about it.
Yeah.
That translates into sales. I'm aware of that bait, and I'm interested in that bait now strictly because of what he did on the James River and a Bassmaster Open.
And it's timely. It's timely. So that is a huge, huge factor that I think has to be addressed on how much marketing and sales are generated based upon the performance of these guys when it was 6 months ago.
I mean, but it was also on CBS. So that could be a trade-off.
But
network TV.
Okay,
versus
I said
the
I wasn't going
to
do it, but I'm going to go back to what I said yesterday, dude. If you're going to put it on a platform where you're trying to bring in people that are not familiar with the game, you got to set it up for them.
Yeah, but then those people who aren't familiar with the game probably don't care that it's live or that it's 6 months before. The people that you're not familiar with the game don't care that it was filmed in a pre-spawn deal
and that it isn't aired. Why not do it live on the Outdoor Channel if you're not really trying to appeal to those people and save whatever the number is? I know it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't know what it is. I bet it, if I had to guess, I bet it's between $200,000 and $300,000 that they had to pay. Easily. Easily. So, I don't know, man. Like I said, I watched the entire thing. I actually watched it twice, Matthew. And from a fishing fan perspective of somebody that is familiar with it, it was badass. It was cool to watch. It was really neat to see what Jacob Wheeler did, right?
He's
and how he
damn
did it.
Good.
Yeah, but I don't know. I believe and I think the adjustments will be made to where the murkiness and the validity of trying to really showcase and move product for the companies that are involved with this thing. I think that they're going to realize this and hopefully changes are going to take place in 2020. That's about all I got, man. What else? What else?
I thought he handled, I mean, just based on his perspective, like I said, I watched an hour of it. I've not watched the TV show, yeah. So I don't know how much of the TV show was focused on the fact that they all ended up in the same area in the second period.
Taco was hilarious.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that he said was, it was cool. It was pretty funny. All right. So, I don't know, man. It's an endless discussion that's going to take place. Hopefully, the schedule will be coming out soon. But in the meantime, we have a very special guest that we're going to get to here. After our break, Mr. Mike Iaconelli is going to join us and talk about his victory on the James River.
Would you say it was an experience victory? It was a victory that he earned because of his experience. It wasn't just, I mean, he's talking about running tides. He was talking about how the tough fishery.
I would say absolutely 100%. Yes.
It wasn't just found an area and caught him. It was like decades of experience
that
went into this W.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll find out. Coming back with Ike. Everybody, stay tuned.
Sleek new design with easy control file. The clearest images underwater with uncompromising range. Live mapping from the touchscreen. View notifications, video, even Google Maps on screen. And for the first time ever, real-time view of fish movements with Live Sight Sonar. HDS Live. New from Lowrance.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole down.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water, day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
AFCO has a new foul weather rain suit called the Hydronaut. A lot of the features that I really like about it first is the speed vent hood. If it's raining out, you know, how a person gets wet is when you run down the lake and the hood comes down. With the speed vent hood, it's going to stay up. It has a camera mount in the pocket on the chest. The Hydronaut has a two-layer, 100% waterproof nylon shell. If you're interested in a rain suit that has a lot of cool features that's going to keep you dry, you need to check out the Hydronaut from AFCO.
The Heart of the Basscat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast-off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Basscat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Basscat. Feel the rush.
Aaron Martin's here. I'm going to be telling you about a new product by Sunline. It's Siglon PE times 8. I've been using it almost extensively all year for my frogging, flipping, drop shotting, shaky heading, worming, jerk baiting. It's by far my favorite Sunline braid. I don't say this unless I think it's true, but honestly, it's the best braid in the market of any of the braids. Definitely check it out. It's a price point line, $14.95 for 165 yards, and that could last you a whole year, just one spool with using leader material. So again, it's Siglon PE times 8. It's my favorite braid, and I think if you use it, it'll be your favorite braid too.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
The message is simple. Win. Coming in 2019, the Ducket Fishing Silverado. It's coming at you for $99.95. Check it out at DucketFishing.com. There is no gray area, just silver. Check it out. All right, we are back on a Tuesday, ready to go to our special guest. He was a very, very busy man.
Well, he's been busy since, like, the 90s.
Probably before that.
When the last time he woke up and was just like, I got nothing to do this weekend.
Wow, I don't know. You can ask him that. All right, let's see. Ike, there, man?
I'm here.
All right, how are you, man?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Probably not as good as you are. Just an incredible week last week, man.
Thank you. It's funny. It happened, and I've been thinking about winning that particular event for a lot of years, but I got thrown right back into the fire. I felt like it hadn't sunk in yet, even though it happened a few days ago. I'm right back in the fire, and I haven't really got to enjoy it yet, but it feels good. It feels good.
All right, let's talk about that. I want to go back and get your thoughts on so many times, just like you said, you've been close. What was different this time, Mike?
In a tidal fishery, things change a lot more than a normal event. A natural lake, a natural river, even a reservoir to a certain extent has more stability. And in tidal water, that change, that flux that happens every day, it can get you really quick. And seems like the other four tries I've had there, I had one day where something happened, and a lot of that was tidally influenced. The tide didn't do exactly what it was supposed to. I misjudged the timing. I had a lost fish. Those normal things that happen really had kept me from winning there before. And this year, it all came together. And the tide, the way that I worked with the tide clicked this year. And that's so important. It's so hard to explain to anglers that haven't fished tide how important it is to the minute to pick the right tide. It's such a weird thing. I've learned on the Delaware, you miss it by 5 minutes sometimes, it's over. You could have the winning area. You could have the winning fish. And if you miss it by 5 minutes, it's over. And so this year, it just fell into place. The timing worked. I was in the right place at the right time. And it makes all the difference in the world in tidal rivers.
Is understanding the tide, and realize you're talking to two guys from Oklahoma here, Ike, but is understanding that tide deal is the only way you can get it 100% right to study the charts, to know exactly what is supposed to happen, or is it also something that the more you fish it, you get intuition comes into play too?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both those things you just said, and it's a little bit of a third thing. You know, what you just said, you hit it right on the head. I mean, tidal charts are so important because it gives you the mean average of where you need to be at what time. So, you know, you pop on your Lowrance unit, there's a tidal chart on there. You look at your app, you got your tidal chart. So that's an important part. The second part, the intuition part, and I think where the experience, and you look at guys like Ish Monroe and Brian Schmidt, just two examples of guys that keep winning on tidal water. Ish in the Delta and Brian Schmidt everywhere up and down the East Coast. They understand that even that chart that tells you that tide, you have to have a flexibility because things change the tide. Things like moon phase, things like wind, things like stuff that's happening out in the bay or the ocean sometimes can affect the tide. So it's not, that chart's not always perfect, and you've got to adapt and adjust on the fly. So there's that element to it. And then, you know, the last element is just that little element of, you know, being in the right place at the right time. And at the end of the day, sometimes that's good decision-making, and sometimes it's a little bit of luck. I hate to use that word in the sport, but sometimes it's a little bit of luck. And you know, this year versus, I think, the last four tries there, I ended up in the right creek at the right time, and I made the right move to the next creek at the right time, and my rhythm was just 100% on. You know, it's not like I fished clean. You hear guys say in tournaments you have to fish 100% clean to win. I didn't fish clean. I missed a few fish each day, including the last day, but my rhythm of being in the place at that right tide, at that right moment when those fish decided to eat, was right on the money. And I honestly, I don't remember it being that good since I won the Delaware back in, you know, who knows, 4 or 5 years ago, whatever that was. So, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy to get that timing down right. But it happened last week for me.
So you talk about that, and you're obviously known for your fish the moment phrase, but is this one of those instances where, you know, you rotated between six creeks on the James here, focusing on quote unmolested bass, but but is this one unmolested. Of the, that's what it says. I'm just reading just reading what it says there.
I hear you. Yeah.
Is this one of those deals though where you knew, I'm going to go to this creek, then my next stop is this creek, then my next stop is this creek? It's not like you get way out of rotation here. You pretty much knew how it was going to go down as far as one stop, two stop, three stop, four stop, right?
Yeah, you know how it's going to go down, but you have to have that flexibility, again, to adjust. So, you know, on paper, I know that my furthest creek south is where I wanted to start each day because that's where I would catch my lowest tide. And then I knew as I ran back the other way that I would regain tide, so regain low water, right? So that first creek that I fished in the extreme southern part of my run, which wasn't that far, I was going to see low water there first, and I would see it change and come back there. As soon as I would start to see that water get a little off there, and again, a lot of it's just that feeling, I would make my run to my next creek, and I'd gain a little bit of water. And I'd make my next run and gain water. And that's sort of the game I play each day from south to north. And I knew that as that tide would rise, I knew, you know, how they shift on targets and which baits to change, right? You know, especially the first 2 days, changing from the jig on the extreme low to the vibration jig, the lever on rising water. But the other thing where I say you got to be flexible is you got to be able to throw in, you know, the X factor. And the X factor happened to me on the last day, which was I got to one of the creeks, which I felt like was my best creek, I got to it a little later than I wanted to. And again, I talked about, you know, missing it by 5 minutes. I missed this by more than that. I missed it by about 15 minutes. And when I got in there, after just not getting any bites on the obvious stuff, and my co-angler catches one on a finesse worm behind me, it sort of made me start to think that these fish had shifted a little. And that's when a crankbait, I made a switch to a crankbait, fishing deeper than I'd fished all week. So that, you know, that move was fluid. That move wasn't something I had scripted out. It was in an area that I wanted to be in, but it was a move that won the tournament for me. I mean, that's the funny thing. You can look back on these wins, and you know too, Matt, you've had wins you look back on, and you can pick that moment that was the deciding factor. You know, if I don't switch to that crankbait and that creek at 10:30. If I don't switch to that crankbait in that creek, I come in with 10 and a half pounds. I come in with maybe 11 and a quarter if things worked out. And I switched that crankbait and came in with almost 14. And that was the winning move. And that for sure wasn't scripted, you know.
One of the things I was talking with Jeffries about off air was that the Molex Lover has been around for a while, but it's a really unique kind of looking, I don't even, like, it's a vibrating jig, but I don't know what kind of category to even put that thing in. But that was, I mean, I guess, is that kind of the first win that's been a part of for you?
It's the first big win that it played a dominant role. You know, I've caught some fish on it in some of my other wins, some other high finishes over the years, but it didn't really dominate like it did here. And, you know, that category of baits, if you look at vibrating jigs, there's nothing new about the domination of that category of baits, man. I think, you know, you look at the last 2 or 3 years, dude, it plays a lot anymore, a vibrating jig. But, you know, to me, it's like the vibrating jig is a lot like a crankbait, in that you should pick the action of a vibrating jig based on the conditions. And the one thing I know about the Lover is that it has a much wider side-to-side than a traditional chatterbait. And I still love traditional chatterbaits. I throw them a lot. But when the water's hot, that it seems like that wider side-to-side vibration of that vibration jig versus, say, a Z-Man or a you know, Pure Poison or one of those other ones, it has a much wider wobble, a wider side-to-side. And that's important in hot water. The other thing is, for anyone that throws a original chatterbait, you know the downfall of an original chatterbait, which is they're horrible around wood. They're horrible. Come on, man. You know, you've thrown it around docks and laydowns. That thing snags up every other tree, every other dock. And that's because that blade, if you look at a traditional chatterbait, the blade moves left to right, right? It's on an islet. It rotates. And because of that, the blade compresses on that piece of wood. It folds down or falls to the left, and your hook sticks in the piece of wood. The great thing about the Lover, and I hope everybody listening tries one, is that it's a fixed blade. The blade is actually molded to the head in a fixed position. And so it's almost akin to a bill on a crankbait now. So now you have a vibrating jig that when you hit that hard target, you hit that dock, you hit that lay down, you hit that piling, like I did at the James, it will not, it doesn't snag. It deflects and rides over it like a crankbait would. And that's a beauty of that bait. So it's in the vibrating jig category. It does a little bit different thing in the water, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like a hybrid, the old scrounger head, if you kind of remember that, except then make a little bit more difficult. And
yeah, it is. It's a hybrid bait, and it's really cool. It's got hook. You know, you can change your hook options. So it comes with a single hook that's skirted. And I'd say 70% of the time I'd leave that and just add whatever trailer you want on there. A grub, a crawl, a small swim bait is great. But the hook is on a split ring. So you could also take that factory hook off, and you could add an offset hook. You could add a swim bait, you know, with the little screw eye in the front. You could add a treble hook on the back, which I do for schooling fish a lot. So it's got a lot of options. You can customize it. It's really a cool bait.
Mike, I just thought of something, and I'm going to test your memory bank here. I want to go all the way back to the Federation days, to the current nation days, but back then it was the Federation. And
yeah,
all the lakes that are around you, the main bodies of water, here's what I want to know. Okay, you've won on the Delaware River. You've won now on the James River. Have you won anything on Champlain? Yes.
I have.
Okay.
I have won on Champlain. I won my first, and this is just after I started fishing the elites. Back then they were the top 150s. I got to win on Lake Champlain in 1999. It was September, I think, of 1999. I won on Lake Champlain, which was unbelievable for me, because up to that point, Lake Champlain was a lake that my club went to every year, Top Rod Bassmasters. We went on a club trip there every year. And I had fished some New Jersey Federation team events there, and I had some nice finishes there, but I'd never won on Lake Champlain up until that event. And it was the second pro event I ever fished in my life. And I got to, I won over one of the guy that I consider one of my heroes, sport, Rick Klun, came in second in that tournament. So, and that was a special one. I'll never forget that one.
Okay. What about the Finger Lakes?
Finger Lakes. So Finger Lakes, if you put them all together, you could put them all together. Cayuga, Seneca, all of them, Onondaga, any of these lakes up in this part of the country. I've never won on any of these lakes. I've had a lot of high finishes from Federation days to now, to MLF days, but I've never had a chance to win on any of these Finger Lakes. And I really, it's another, you know, you set these mini goals for yourself, you know, as your career goes on. You set many goals of, man, I want to try to win here. And, man, I just like we talked about, I can think of, especially on Cayuga, I can think of the fish sometimes that got off that cost me winning the tournament, or the moment that I made the bad decision. And, you know, I've had a few of those that have kept me from winning up here as well, you know. But, man, I'd say the lakes in this part of the country, upstate New York, outside of tidal water, is really sort of feels like my second home.
Yeah.
You know, I'm real comfortable anytime you fish up on these natural glacial cut lakes, you know.
All right, I want to go to the instant feedback. A number of people want to know how much difficulty was there for you going from the MLF format to the five fish limit format?
And a co-angler.
That's funny.
It's funny. I've actually had that question a lot. People from the weigh-in crowd at Bass to my social media to now coming through your IMs, and the answer is zero. It didn't feel any different to me at all. You know, I can't explain it, but my strategy didn't change. My fishing style didn't change. Keeping bass, culling, that whole thing, it's like riding a bike. It came right back to me. So there was no difference at all. And I want to stress, you know, I'm an MLF guy, but I want to stress that I still appreciate both styles of tournament fishing. And I think they're both really, for me, they're fun. You know, I have a ton of fun fishing major league fishing, catching 60 bass in three periods, weighing them and releasing them. I have a lot of fun doing that. And I have a lot of fun getting 12 bites at the first day of the James River and having to call three or four times from 12 bites. And keeping five and getting them to bring them in and weigh them and release them back alive later in the day. I like both formats, man. It was very natural. It was very comfortable. Nothing felt weird or awkward to me at all.
How'd your coes do?
My coes did really good. My coe the first day had a small limit. My coe the second day, and this is something that this is the first time I'm publicly talking about it. So I do want to mention this. My co the second day was a local guy, and he got in my boat. I talked to him on the phone. We said, hey, we're going to meet here in the morning. Here's what I'm doing. Sounded like the amazing guy. Got off the phone, met him at the ramp in the morning. He has four or five rods. He has his tackle bag. We get in the boat, and we're idling to just wait. We're a late flight that day, and we're chatting. He looks over at me, and he says, Mike, I'm not going to fish today. I'm just going to watch you. And I looked at him like, nah, man. I'm like, you could fish. It's all right. And he went on, you know, he didn't catch a fish the day before. He felt like he was out of it. And he was a local guy, and he wanted to just kind of learn. He wanted to sit back and learn. I said, look, man. I said, you don't have to do that. I said, if at any time you change your mind, you want to fish, that's totally fine. But he never did. And it was, you know, things like that, when they happen, you know, it's strange. It's strange. It's weird. But, you know, who knows? Maybe because of that, you know, I caught an extra fish or two that day. Or, you know, I don't know. It's hard to look back and say if that affected it. But he never made a cast that day.
Wow.
And at the end of the day, I thanked him. I said, man, I said, hey, I got to thank you. I said, this is only the second time, literally, it was the second time that's happened in my career where a co-angler didn't want to fish. And I said, man, thank you. You don't know how much it means. And I said, you know, you honestly, you've given me a shot to win, and I appreciate it. And he looked back at me and said, you know, this was one of the best learned experiences I've ever had. And I learned a lot about my home water that I never knew about. So I hope he had a great time. And then my partner the last day did really, really good. He was one of those snipers. Matt, he'd be like you. I'd imagine you being a sniper. I fished with you one time, and that's what I felt like you are. You're a sniper from the back. But totally respectful, never did anything he wasn't supposed to do, but he was good. You know what I mean? My guy the last day should have been from the front of the boat because he was that good. And he did really good. He had a limit for, I think, right around 8 pounds or a hair. Maybe it was 8.5. I don't remember, but... Man, he caught a 3.5 pounder that day. That, you know, when he catches it, you look at it, you're like, God, I needed
that fish. But
when they're doing everything right, you're just happy for him. You know, I reached down there and got that fish for him. He's caught on a light line,
And he ended up in third place.
Another interesting fact, and then I'll let you guys get on. Is that
in those previous four events on the James that I've had, I had two of my guys
on the back of the boat win the co-angler title.
so now I've got a good... My track record on the James for co-anglers is really good. I've got two wins and a third place this year.
So if I end up fishing the James and you want to co-angle with me, put your name in the lottery, man. Come on. You'll win.
My only question is, did you ask your day two partner to cough up some gas money at the end of the day?
No gas money.
In fact, I didn't ask any of my guys for any gas money. All of them,
like, insisted to give me $20 or $30,
except I would not take a single penny from that from my guy on the second day. I just couldn't do it.
That's a cool story.
Could not do it. And in fact, he took a couple baits. I gave him a couple baits that day of the lures we were using, so he could go out and use them. And you know, I tell you, man, I had a good time. I enjoyed myself. You know, this is a whole big thing on its own. I talk to Becky about this all the time, and I'm a believer in this, that in pro-am events, even in marshaled events where you have a marshal or you have an official, the energy in the boat is key. For me, at least, the energy in the boat is key to what happens during the day. When I get a good co-angler, a good marshal, a good boat official, and we're having a good time and the energy is right, the day goes great. I've had co-anglers and marshals and officials in the past where there's just this weird negative energy going on, or there's this tension, and the days hardly ever go as well. The energy that I had in my boat for 3 days at the James was unreal, and I had three good guys, so I want to thank them all. They were really good partners.
That's super awesome. Important if you're fishing at any sort of level, whether you are fishing in the front of the boat or the back of the boat, especially after my experiences this year. I could not agree more about it. Man, it's... And I've had really good positive energy this year with my guys.
Dude, yeah. I know you're kind of tight for time, but I do want to get to a couple of questions, and then I want to talk about your foundation event that's coming up. So first, David in Wisconsin wants to know, do you prefer the MLF formats that are all on one lake or multiple lakes?
It's a great question, and the answer is real easy for me. I like the ones that are on multiple lakes. You know, I like the sort of the you have to keep thinking. You're always on your toes. So, you know, when we look back at last year's tour events, like the one in North Carolina, to me, really stands out. You know, we were on, you know, three different bodies of water throughout the qualifying rounds. And then especially the ones where the championship round is on a place that we can't fish. I like that, because that really, to me, is the epitome of what Major League Fishing stands for, and what it does in the cups, is there's no practice. You know, you go out and you fish the moment, and I've done really well in some of those, and I've bombed in some of those where you just miss it, you know, and that's just fishing. So if it was up to me, if I was the guy making the decisions at MLF, I'd have all of them would be multiple lakes, and all of them would have a championship lake on the last day that we can't fish until we actually show up there.
Interesting. All right. Austin wants to know, do you still have the panic box in your boat?
I still carry the panic box all the time. It's you know, it's funny because I have it in a Flambeau box. I have it in one of the smaller ones. I have it like a, I don't know, it's like the 3,000 size box. It's not a big box. It doesn't take up a lot of space. And it literally sits in, I have a bag where I have my spinnerbait bag. And it's a Flambeau bag that has three boxes in it. I carry mullet spinnerbaits from a quarter all the way up to 3/4 of an ounce. And in the very front of that, there's another little pouch. And it fits in there real nice. I put it in there. It never comes out of the boat. In an emergency situation, I can pull it out, you know, and I can tell you it got used this year. I don't know if anybody remembers going back to the Major League Fishing event that we had on Smith Lake. I pulled out the panic box and got some really small lures out that caught some fish for me in that event. They didn't end up being the main players, but I caught a few on an inline spinner, and I caught a few on a crappie crankbait in that event, and they were those spotted bass that were schooling in the morning. They were feeding on real small bait. I didn't have to think about it. I knew I had them in the panic box, and it worked, you know, even now, all these years later.
All right, very cool. Andy in Indiana wants to know, when you're using the 18-foot boat, did you notice any changes? Have they made any changes to it? And what are your thoughts about fishing out of an 18-foot boat?
That's a good question. Yeah. So I'll start with the second one first. My thoughts out of fishing an 18-foot boat, I've got two sides to it. The one is I like it because I think it does show that you don't necessarily need the top of the line boat. You know, an 18-footer is a great boat to fish out of. Shoot, you know, Vegas now is fishing out of a John boat, and I love fishing out of that thing as well. So I like the fact that it shows you don't always need the biggest of the biggest to compete. But I think there's also, you know, some downside to an 18-foot boat on particular fisheries. You know, if you're on a small body of water, it's a great boat. If they stick you on Lake Ontario and you're in an 18-foot boat with a 150, that's a tough boat to fit out of. And then as far as changes, you know, these boats are being updated almost every tournament. You know, we've already got to use the new Lowrance Ghost trolling motors at a cup event. So, you know, they're constantly updating the equipment. They're giving us the best of tools on those boats. I throw one thing out there real quick, and it'd be wrong if I was on this show without being a little political and making some kind of political statement. in Major League Fishing, these cup events, for 6-7 years, I fished them, and they were by invitation only. And I had no problem on getting in an 18-foot boat with equipment sometimes that wasn't my equipment in a boat this year that's a Nitro. I had no problem getting in a boat that wasn't mine in an invitation style cup event. But now that the contestants are qualified from the regular tours, and in the regular tours we fish out of our own boat, we're in our boat to qualify for that cup. So I think it's wrong. I think that needs to be changed. I think moving forward, Major League Fishing needs to revamp that. I think we should be in our own boats for these cups as well. You know, now that it's not invitation only, now we're working to get here with our own equipment. We should be back in our own equipment. It's no different than what happened with the Bassmaster Classic years ago. You know, we need to fight to get our boats back in these cups.
We talked about that in the very first segment, Ike, before we had you on. This is no longer a, like we said, a specialty event, a side gig, a made for this is your careers now.
Yeah.
And
this is career
it
now.
Needs to be treated as careers as such, not a specialty event that is fished in coordination with your primary. This is it.
Yeah.
This is all there is. And
couldn't agree more.
And also, I'll do a social media shout out, isn't it? It's at Vegas the Hammer.
Yep, Vegas the Hammer on Instagram.
Mike Iaconelli,
killing it.
Absolutely. He has more earnings this year than five BPT guys in tournament competition. I'm only stating facts, folks, and yes. It's really cool to watch you and Becky kind of guide him through these youth tournaments in New Jersey and catching his first fish and culling and winning. And it's fun to watch that. So at Vegas the Hammer.
So cool.
You'll probably learn some stuff too.
Yeah, at Vegas the Hammer on Instagram. Check him out. It's been, I could talk to you for hours about that, but it's been the most unbelievable thing as, you know, as a dad, as a parent, you know, watching your children excel at something, you know, I've done that, you know, forever with Drew, with Riley, with Estella, with Vegas and other things, but to see them excel at something that is your passion, you know, and it's tough as a dad because you sort of have to keep it bottled up. You know, you don't want to be that over parent, you don't want to be a burning parent where you're like, you got to do it. You know, so you got to sit back and watch and let it unfold. And it was the hardest thing for me to do as a boat captain in that last tournament. Cause man, I want to tell them what's good as it, you know, but man, you just got to sit back and you got to watch it. But dude, it's the most unbelievable feeling as a parent to watch him in his element and to watch him, you know, make those changes and feel the bite and set the hook. And it was, God, it was crazy. It was probably the most unbelievable fishing experience I've had this year, period. You know, even bigger than the James River win last week. It was unbelievable. I was shaking like a leaf every time he hooked up with a smallmouth. Dude, that thing would be out there jumping, going apeshit, you know, going crazy. 10 foot out of the, you know how they jump.
Yeah.
And dude, he's just as calm as a cookie, drags loose, and I'm shaking. I'm holding the net. You're still allowed to use nets in those events. I'm holding the net. I'm shaking, dude. And every time until that fish got in the net, you know, that fish would get in the net, and I'd inside I'd be yelling. You know, I didn't want to yell because I didn't want to freak him out, but I'd be yelling inside just, you know, it was unbelievable, man. It's hard to describe, but it was way more exciting than the day of fishing for myself. Yeah. I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's cool, man. All right, I know we're running out of time, but I want to give you a chance to talk about your foundation event that's coming up here really soon.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, man, Ike Foundation has, you know, it's grown, man. It's gotten, I don't know, when Becky and I started it, I think maybe 5-6 years ago, we sort of had these timelines. You know, here's a 5-year plan, here's 10-year, here's you know, we block stuff into businesses out like that to track growth and kind of predict how we think it's going to grow. Dude, the Ike Foundation has gotten so much bigger, so much quicker than we thought, and it's so awesome to see people supporting that organization. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, we're trying to get kids fishing. We're trying to get kids fishing that have never fished before, wherever that's at. A lot of times in urban areas, you know, they're the kids, you know, that man, they live on water. Every urban center around the United States has water around it, but for some reason the kids don't fish. So, you know, that's really what we're trying to do, and we've been fortunate enough to get crazy, crazy support on this event every year. And it's the Ike Foundation Celebrity Pro-Am. It happens in a couple weeks. It's August 10th, and it happens on the Camden waterfront in New Jersey, right on the Delaware River. It's a great venue because it's sort of the epitome of what Ike Foundation is trying to do, right? The city of Camden, the city of Philadelphia, directly across the river, we have so many kids come to this event that have never fished before, and it's such an amazing feeling to see them cast, you know, touch a rod and reel, to hit a target. Create lures. We have lure painting. We have fishing. Watch them reel in a catfish for the first time. Such an unbelievable feeling to see that. But it's a great event.
We have a tournament side of it where you can go out and fish on the river. If you have your own boat, you can enter with your boat. If you don't have a boat, we have pro slots available and celebrity slots where you can fish with a pro or a celebrity. And that's a really cool portion of it. We have a kayak portion for guys that are, you know, regular dudes that have kayaks with great prizes behind that. By the way, first place prize on the boater side is a Bass Cat and Yamaha, which is pretty unbelievable. But the real thrust of the event, Mark, and you've been there before, so you've got to see it, is the Family Fun Fest Day. And that to me is awesome. And I get to hang around, talk to kids, sign autographs. I get to help with the casting. Dude, that to me is the event. And that Family Fun Fest happens from, 11 to 2 the same day, Saturday, August 11th, Saturday, August 10th, I'm sorry. And if anybody's listening, if you're in that area, if you're in the tri-state area, come up. It's totally free. There's fun, food, games, music, face painting, everything, man, casting. And we have a high school kids, high school challenge tied to that too, where we have a lot of the area high schools come in and they have a skills challenge. That's casting, knot tying, lure designing, and we've got a lot of cool prizes and a trophy for that as well. So, man, I invite everybody to come out and check it out. And just check out the Ike Foundation, man. It's IkeFoundation.org. A lot of different ways you can help. We're getting rods and reels to people all over the country. So even if you don't live in New Jersey, New York, Philadelphia, you want to help out, you can. Check it out. Be great.
All right. Real cool, man. Last question. Are you going to fish any more opens?
Well, the last open's on Lake Oneida.
Yeah.
And we just mentioned it in the early part of this call, man. I've got a bone to pick with Oneida too. So, I'm about 80% sure I'm going to fish it, assuming I can get in. On the James River, believe it or not, I was 68th on the waiting list. I got bumped up to 43rd, and then the Monday before I cast, I had the call. I got the call that, there's a position available for you. So, assuming there's positions available, I have a good feeling I'll be at Oneida. I think it's the first week of September.
All right. Very cool, man. Well, best of luck to you, Mike. Looking forward to seeing you very soon. And just a great job last week on the James River, man.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. I appreciate the call.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, Ike.
Later.
All right. See ya. All right. There you have it, folks. Mike Iaconelli. And very interesting story on the co-angler.
Best interview in the game. Always has been.
Yeah.
Always will be. Refers to the host by name. Compliments us. When you ask him a question, he said there's three components to it. I'm going to talk about this, this, this. Then he talks about this, this, this. Lays everything out. Goes into depth. Knows the details of what's going on with his foundation, with his life. So, if you are going to have a blueprint on how a professional angler gives an interview, you just listen to it.
I still have the cassette in the office. Yeah, it's still in the wrapper, but that was kind of the beginning of putting together a plan on what to do and how you do it and how you treat the media, how you treat the organizations. Just dialed in. That's why he's one of the best in the business, man.
I'll tell you what, though, after talking with him, he makes it sound really complicated. The tides.
What do you mean? Oh,
now,
the tides?
I've always been told, because I've not fished a tide. Have you fished a tournament where there are tides where you are in the front of the boat? Neither have I.
No.
Out of everything that's quote unquote intimidating, these are the two things that I find intimidating. I find the tidal fisheries and then the boat lane fisheries. Those are the two ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because one, you rip all your stuff out. The other, you're on a sandbar for the whole night.
Yeah.
And the tidal fisheries, you have two options, right? You either do a lot of homework, you have the tide charts like he did, and you chase the tide. We see that a lot on the St. John's River. We've seen on the Delaware. Or you go park your boat in one area and you have 2 half-hour periods where you catch them during the day. Those are your two options, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Either park it or run the tides.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting that he was able to find those 5-minute windows that he talked about, and consistently too.
So what would you say would be more intimidating? tidal waters or a 10-mile-an-hour wind out of the west on Lake Erie?
More intimidating?
Yeah.
Tidal waters.
Really?
Yeah, I've been out on the Erie stuff. I mean, once you get in it and understand it, I mean, the most dangerous part there is getting through the breakwater.
Yeah.
And once you're out in it, I mean, it's big swells, but you're fine. You know, as long as you're smart and safe.
Take your time.
Take your time, yeah. I mean, you can actually run in between those big swells out on Erie.
Yeah.
Especially out of Buffalo and stuff. Yeah. They don't really stack up. The tidal waters, I mean, I saw guys that, you know, you see Davey Hike get stuck. You see a bunch of guys where it's just a boat on the sand.
Yeah. Do you remember when we were at the event where Tim Horton showed up with the deep V? Remember that? Mm-hmm. He made the boat switch.
I think Snowden had one too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Which was a great move, and
yeah, I'm shocked that they don't allow that anymore. I would think that that would be a safety rule.
Yeah,
I would be totally fine, especially when you get to fisheries that are over X number of acres or that are designated big water fisheries. Yeah. If they allow them to use a deep V, it benefits everybody.
Yeah,
benefits the marshal, benefits the angler, benefits the boat companies.
Now, you're right.
I understand that rule encompasses the Steve Kennedy and Odd Defoe's, you know, the aluminum, the tunnel holes and all that stuff. That's what they tried to eliminate, that so you don't have four different boats for the entire season. Yeah. But I think that could be almost a safety exception when they get up to the big lakes.
No, that's a good point.
We don't really have to worry about that.
Good point. All right, tomorrow's show, we're going to have the FLW 2019 Rookie of the Year. Ron Nelson's going to be on, and really looking forward to talking to him. And then I want to let everybody know, tomorrow we are going to talk about something that we have in the works that is confirmed, and I'm going to announce it tomorrow, some cool stuff that we're going to be doing while you're on the road.
What's that? Am I aware
of
this?
Are you kidding me? Yes.
Oh, next week, to the shows next week.
Yeah, it's next week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Yeah, yeah. I've had some talks about that. We're going to have some big-name guys on location from...
Matt's going to be on location. I'm going to be in studio, but we're going to be able to do some really cool stuff, some stuff on the water, some stuff off the water, and we will talk more about that tomorrow. All right, man, anything else? Good show today. Great interview, as always, with Ike.
Anything I like that else? Hat. Yeah. Cornell hockey.
Yeah.
Do you want a Cornell hockey stat or fact?
What's
that? You know, they're the only NCAA D1 team that's gone undefeated and won the national championship.
Really? What year was that?
1970.
Wow.
They were, I believe, 29-0.
Yeah. There was hockey stuff everywhere on campus.
Yeah, it's a big school.
Yeah.
Big hockey school.
Very, very cool. All right. The other thing is, when I was driving around and we were on vacation, you know, and listening to music and doing, I was like, I wonder if this song's ever been played on this road before. Because, you know, I listen to some obscure stuff. I don't know
Black
why that pops into my brain. You're just kind of like, I'm sure I'm sitting in this car and this song has never been played. Meanwhile, Carolyn's looking at me going, you're really weird.
You got a giraffe shirt, a Cornell hockey hat. What else do we have? What's going to be tomorrow? Did you pick up any other swag?
No.
Did you get I visited Niagara Falls shirt or anything like that?
No. I have the poncho still. We kept the poncho.
You got to wear the poncho from Niagara Falls for Mr. Nelson. This would be his first time on the show. He might be a little, little weirded out by it.
Nah, no poncho. All right, everybody. Great show today. Make sure, if you haven't already, if you're listening to us on iTunes, make sure you rank us and give us a review. It helps us out tremendously. Yes, I asked for it, Matthew. We surpassed the 500 mark, and I greatly appreciate everybody listening on iTunes doing that for us. It's good stuff. Great stuff out there. Hey, bad, good, whatever it is, we want to hear. We want to try and make this thing better. So that's it, Matthew. Tomorrow, Ron Nelson. Everybody be safe. We're out of here.